I've enjoyed playing here. This has been over 20 years that I've been coming to Royal Melbourne. And this way golf should be played.
We love coming down under.
Look, it's phenomenal to play. The quality of the golf's been great. But the enthusiasm of the people has been the thing that's just been amazing.
Tier of courses that I'm willing to shave my neck for in Kingston Heath to Victoria. Get me out of bed to shave.
Especially somewhere like Australia in the sand belt, and I have so many great memories of being down there.
Welcome back to Australian Golf Passport. It's Scott Warren here as always, and Matt Mollica joins me. Hey, Matty.
Hi, Scott. Good to see you after your family holiday to Singapore. Looked like a phenomenal time, and we're going to follow that up with a phenomenal episode. We're going to close the loop on RM, which was a thought that really only occurred to us relatively recently, that we dedicate a particular episode to the composite course there. So,
yeah, it's a bit of a mysterious one to a lot of people. It doesn't get played a lot. When it does get played, it can look a little bit different depending on how they set it up. There's a few questions, you know, about how it works and various features on it. We had a ton of responses when we put a shout out for questions with our listeners. So looking forward to getting through those and hearing a bit more about what this mysterious third course at RM is.
Yeah, I was very happy to see so many questions and so much interest from people. So hopefully we can get to all of those and do those inquiries justice. Mm. So
before we jump in, let's mention that we do this for Angus and Grace Go Golfing, angusandgracegogolfing.com, Angus and Grace Go Golfing on Insta, and obviously in store, in real life at William Street in Paddington in Sydney. Some really cool stuff coming up as we get into summer. I know Matt's working on a few different products and things that might expand the appeal of Angus and Grace to an even larger audience. My wife, I played yesterday and I was putting the shorts on, and she's like, I think those shorts are just more edgy than you would have bought for yourself. So I'm pleased that this happened. So if you're not sure whether it's for you, go into the shop if you're in Sydney, try some stuff on, have a chat to Matt, guarantee you'll leave with a little bag or something. So we thank Matt for his support.
Something quality, yeah. So hey. I saw some color swatches of polos that he's going to hopefully bring out this summer, including a khaki that looked fantastic.
I hope one of the swatches was navy.
I think the navy base is covered. Yep, I'm happy there. But he's also got some sale items, including jackets, which we've not spoken about. And the first time I saw anyone on a course wearing Angus and Grace Go Golfing apparel, they'd gone the full ensemble. They'd gone the whole nine yards and they had a jacket. And so there's a few left in not complete size range from what I can gather, but their price has come way down, as has the mock turtlenecks, the merino long sleeve tops. So might not be wearing those in the coming 4 months, but they are a timeless sort of piece that you'll do very, very well to hang on to and wear for years ahead. So you can pick one of them up at reduced price at the moment if you're quick. So
very good.
All right, let's get straight into it. We've got Royal Melbourne Composite. We've got some good questions. We've done some research. We might be factually prepared a little more than usual. And no Captain Cook type erroneous dates and whatnot. So that will be a departure from our usual MO, but a welcome departure.
Why don't you kick us off, Matty, with why a composite course and how did it come to exist?
Okay. So as everyone knows, Royal Melbourne has two courses, a West course designed by Alistair McKenzie and an East course designed by Alec Russell, opened 1930 and 1932. And they're spread over four parcels of land, some road crossings to play each of those courses to get the full 18 in. Royal Melbourne played host to the Canada Cup, which was the predecessor of the World Cup, in 1959. So the Canada Cup had been going just 5 years then, and the courses at RM were 29, 30 years old around that time. And early in that calendar year in 1959, there was a meeting that's described really, really well by Peter Thompson in Mike Clayton's book on the courses of RM. There's a couple of pages dedicated to that meeting and the origins of the composite course. Tomo talks about a meeting between a couple of council members at Royal Melbourne, their longtime club secretary, Bill Richardson. Peter Thompson himself was present at that meeting, as was Claude Crockford, venerable superintendent of the courses. And they had devised a plan where they could host the tournament over 18 holes that were contained within the largest paddock at Royal Melbourne. So some west holes, some east holes, no road crossings, all within the one big fence line. And there was a little bit of to and fro from what I can gather, just double checking some facts and some club minutes that are cited in Dr. Green's book, John Green's book that we made reference to during our Royal Melbourne East episode, the sequence of those holes, which holes were included and which hole would act as a starter at that time. They eventually decided upon a collection of holes and a sequence of holes for that 1959 Canada Cup. And whenever members at Royal Melbourne play the composite course, it's that order and that collection of holes that are still played to this day. There's about five or six different club events that are held over the composite course each year for members. The Luttrell Trophy is a par event held from the back tees over the composite in November. There's typically an Australia Day event at Royal Melbourne that sometimes has some visitor access and sometimes doesn't. Club championship semis and finals, from memory, are also held over the composite course for men and women. One or two other events as well. So, yeah, that's held over that sequence and that number of holes that we'll get into a little bit more as the episode unfolds.
And so that original sequence, which we'll talk about how it's changed and why it's changed since then, but we've got one west and two west, then one east and two east. I think this shows also how many great little loops there are on that main paddock that you're able to do this. So one west, one east, two east, and then on to five, six, seven west. You skip the eighth and the ninth. You go to 10 west, which is obviously the tees right near seven green. You play 10, 11, 12 west. Instead of crossing the roads, you go right off 12 west and you play 17, 18 west. And then three west tee, obviously quite close to 18 west green. You play three west, four west, and then you basically go around the fence line of east holes to finish. Three east, four east, you walk past 16, and then 17 and 18 east to finish.
Perfect. Yep, spot on. And it's remarkable the number of little loops that exist within that main paddock, as you said, but the proximity of green to tee, you notice it while you're playing east or west. You can just see that green, or that tee's just right there. And you might overshoot a green and you're apologizing to someone on a tee of a neighboring course. But it the flows and the transitions when you play composite are just unreal. It's to think that it wasn't designed that with the composite in mind, and yet it works so seamlessly, it's mind-blowing. And when you go through those holes that you just mapped out, I've always tried to talk to people about it in the concept, and you and I get it because of our age, but maybe a 20-year-old or a teenager doesn't. But if you make a mixtape yourself when you were much younger, and it's just chock-a-block full of favorite songs, and you don't want that song to end, but when it does, there's another one that comes along that's fantastic, and you're happy to listen to that, and it's just all killer, no filler for four straight hours.
I think the kids today just make playlists on Spotify. Probably that's their mixtape, right?
That was probably a better analogy.
But actually having to put hours into making a mixtape made it more special, I think, because, you know, like, you can make a playlist in 2 minutes and send it to someone. But if you made someone a mixtape, that was a labor of love.
Yeah.
So the holes, let's kind of treat, you know, west is 12 of the 18 holes, and it's the course that people know best at Royal Melbourne. So we lose six of those holes. Obviously, four of them are the four over the road near Sandringham course. So 13, 14, 15, 16. And the other two that we miss are 8 west and 9 west. And so why don't you talk us through what jumps in to replace each of those?
Okay. So there's six holes that come in from the east course to round out the 18. And we have one and two east. So a short par four, one east, that comes in to replace 8 west. And those holes obviously are running parallel and very close to one another. Longer par four of 9 west is replaced by the long par four of 2 east, which is a really good like for like. A little bit more demanding on the tee with 2 east, but a long approach into that green as there is invariably on Nine West, particularly when you play from the pegs and you're playing into a north wind. And then, as you said, you've got that downhill dogleg right 3 east that comes in a par 3, which is either 4 east or 16 east. Par 5, 17 east comes in for the par 5, 15 west that you lose when you don't cross the road. And then you've got your grandstand finish with 18 east, the long par 4 in the shadows of the clubhouse that just rounds it out. So some will say that the loss of 16 west, which we'll no doubt discuss in a couple of minutes, is a bit of a shame because it's such a great hole. It puts a long club in hand and it would be a really good test for pros. It'd be great to see them play that hole. And you can see Peter Thompson and Gary Player play that hole in Shell's Wonderful World of Golf that they recorded back in 1956. I'll put a link to that film in the show notes for this episode. But they, of course, play west, not composite. So they play that long par 3 16th over the road. Six east holes come in. And I always remember the first time that I saw the composite in play, I went every day to the President's Cup in 1998. And 9 west gets used as a car park. And the sight of nice cars just very orderly positioned and lined up on that hole, it's never a not jarring sight.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a pretty architecturally superb car park.
Yeah.
So I tried to match up the holes that are dropped from west with the hole from east that comes in its place, and doesn't work perfectly because obviously we lose two par threes off west, but we only replace it with one par three off east. But people, and this kind of goes to we'll talk about a bit later, people talk about where would composite be ranked. And obviously you start with west being one of the probably seven best courses in the world. So you lose 8 west and you get 1 east. I think we'd agree that's an upgrade.
Yep.
You lose 9 west for 2 east. And as much as I like 9 west, I'd say that's a marginal upgrade.
Yes, agreed.
13 west for either 4 east or 16 east, I think is a wash to an upgrade. You know, 13 west isn't probably better than those holes. It might be the equal of 4 east, but not as good as 16 east.
True.
15 west to 17 east is an upgrade.
Yep.
I've got two where I don't think that you necessarily get a better hole as a result. So 14 west to 3 east, I probably prefer 14 west. And although they don't match up perfectly because, as I said, we're trying to fit an extra par 3 in the comparison, 16 west versus 18 east. Yeah, 16 west is one of the best handful of holes probably on the whole property. So it's certainly, though, like say 4 of the 6, it's a better hole. And so I think we'll get to later that ranking question. And I think one of the things that hangs over that question about the composite is what makes a golf course versus what makes a collection of golf holes. And that's one thing that makes me a bit uncomfortable about the way that composite's been played around with so regularly whenever it gets used, that it kind of hasn't allowed it to establish as a course in your mind.
Yeah.
But I think that also is, and Clayton's had some feedback, which I think, as always, was good feedback about, feeds into this whole concept around using 4 east or 16 east. One's a better hole, but maybe one actually adds to the some of the parts of the composite more completely. So it certainly does, you know, if you break it down to components, though, the 18 components of west versus the 18 components of composite, it's a better golf course.
Yeah, undeniably. There's very few people who argue that west is by itself superior to the composite. They'll have different opinions to you and I on the merits of 9 west, 15 west, for example, and they'll just view that much more positively.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll also pine for the inclusion of 16 west as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the glaring loss is 16 west. But I think what you pick up through the other changes probably makes up for it.
Yeah.
And I guess that kind of you know, our listener questions will really guide us through the conversation from here, but we haven't deliberately segged to this, but it is the perfect segue in that Golf Guy 77 and Marky P Golf both asked us, what's the best hole at RM not on the composite course? And it's 16 West.
Yeah, you're right.
Probably one of the best 10 long par threes in the game.
Yeah. And some people would argue, they look at that original iteration of the course and see the omission of 16 East, and they'd probably have that, they'd mention that in the same breath.
Mm.
And just think it's such a striking hole to look at and so interesting to play that, well, that's not in there. And we referenced that during the earlier discussion of East in that previous episode where Crenshaw couldn't believe that they weren't playing it. And then Lee Jansen said the same thing to him in 98 when they walked past it. And you'd hear people in the gallery as well just sort of meander along the ropes and just sort of look the whole time at that green complex and think, I can't believe they're not doing it. Like, what's going on? So...
And so, actually, I think we've skipped something important before we get into all these questions is, so we have the original sequence, which I detailed earlier, that was played for the Canada Cup in 1959. It was then used for World Amateur Teams, the World Cup in, I think, the 70s. Then it was kind of used in that state until the 98 Pres Cup, wasn't it? And then the three Presidents Cups at RM have all had a slightly different arrangement of holes?
Yeah, they have. So with a match play format to the President's Cup, they ended up deeming it appropriate to change the sequence of holes that was host to the 1998 edition of the Cup, thinking that most matches would end 3-2, 2-1. If you had that sort of result under the old sequence, original sequence, you're ending up people shaking hands 850 metres from the clubhouse down in that southeastern corner of the property down near 3 East Green or 4 East Green. Mm-hmm. So they decided to bring the last few holes closer to the grandstands and closer to the clubhouse. And so that 1998 President's Cup, they started on 3 West, and then the 16th hole was 18 West, and then the final two holes of that layout were 1 West, 18 East. And
right.
1 West wasn't a particularly good penultimate hole, but it was in close proximity. I can see you just shaking your head. It was in close proximity to the majority of the people who were on the complex at that time, particularly late in the day. You can imagine if you've got four matches going in the afternoon and they're four foursomes and people are following matches and people are at the clubhouse and people are in the grandstands and corporate hospitality, they're all within a relatively small space near those two or three holes. And so that trend continued. One West played as the 17th for the 2019 edition of the President's Cup. And then in the 2019 version of that event, they ended up playing 2 West from a forward tee as the finishing hole, which was just felt clumsy. It was a way of trying to manage traffic around that area of the course where you've got 18 East tee, that huge Rolex corporate chalet behind 17 East Green. Traffic-wise, with galleries, it sort of worked, but you wouldn't arrange holes in that sequence if you started off with a blank sheet of paper and thought about the playing experience.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose we should be grateful that they're playing the President's Cup at architecturally brilliant places like RM and then Kingston Heath in 2028. But it does go to show that the architecture is a distant consideration behind logistics and flow and movement. Having 1 West as the 17th hole, we've said, you know, on when we did the West episode, it's a good opening hole, and that's the best probably thing you can say about it when you're looking at it in the context of a world-class course. Having it as 17 is just yuck. I would love to try to find you could play a composite routing. Drop 1 West. It wouldn't make sense to include either of 8 West or 9 West because you'd have some 300-meter walk, but drop 1 West and then just play 4 East and 16 East back-to-back. If it's good enough for Cypress Point to have back-to-back world-class par threes, I think that would be sensational.
Okay, that'll be a little exercise for our listeners. They can sit there. I know Luke Iper will be all over that. He'll just be going to sleep trying to reroute composite. And how can I, which walk that, am I going to have?
With that many tees near greens, there has to be a way to drop one west and still have a nice walkable course. And then, bang, bang, 4 east, 16 east. That would be good fun.
Was I interesting. Think
you'd have to play them back to back too, because there's nothing else really near. There's no other tees near 4 east green than 16 east tee.
Yeah, it's interesting reading John Green's book. So he sat on History and Archives Committee at Royal Melbourne for decades, and would always meet up and have a chat or a sandwich or a drink with Tom Doak when he was in town for visits to RM. He had unbelievable memory and a love of the course and familiarity and affinity with the courses. But he was also able, he's in a position where he could access old minutes of council meetings at Royal Melbourne, being on that History and Archives subcommittee. And so he talks about extensive organisational requirements for the 59 Canada Cup and two new tees established to further challenge the Canada Cup participants. So we're already lengthening courses in 1959. I don't know which tees they were, but I'll be interested to go and have a look back and try and dig out which ones they were, which holes had some length added to them for the pros at that time. To improve the access for the gallery, large-scale clearance of tea tree and scrub was also undertaken. Careful planning was called for regarding two specific aspects of vegetation clearance that deemed necessary to accommodate catering facilities and to enable the considerable lengths of cable buried for the coverage. The initial composite course was to commence at the third west tee and from there play through to the 12th west. Players would then play 17 and 18 west before crossing to the first east and completing the 6 holes of the east course. The first 2 holes of west were not to be included, but the 8th and 9th holes were. It was decided to change the order. The players under this proposed arrangement would commence at the first east, and upon finishing the second east, would then tackle 5 and 6 west. Thereafter, they'd play the remaining holes of the west course, with the 3rd and 4th being played after the 18th. And when the 4th west was completed, players would embark upon the remaining holes of the east before concluding their round. And this is the point at which the IGA, the International Golf Association, intervened and made a decision that the 1st and 2nd west should be included. So they became the starter, and the 2nd, 8th and 9th were omitted and used as a warm-up area and practice range.
Mm.
So it's a what do they say? Failure is an orphan and success is the son of 1,000 fathers.
Yeah.
Like everyone talking about their own little contribution there. And Bill Richardson, the council, Crockford, IGA, all sorts had a little bit of a way in there. So interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think ideally that would be the way that the course played. Even now, I get the match play concern. And that's, again, logistics and practicalities overpowering things. It would suck to have a lot of matches finishing down on 3 East Green. And how do you get people back? Yeah, it'd probably be the furthest point on the course from the clubhouse. It doesn't make great sense. But I quite like that Canada Cup routing, it moves around the property a few different ways. Like, it doesn't just do a lap. It doesn't go to the kind of northern end west holes first and then the southern end, and east holes. It actually kind of takes you to different parts of the property two or three times during the round, which is what obviously is a nice part of often a good routing of a golf course. And for me, that's what probably makes it feel a bit more like a course than if you just played the 12 west holes and then the 6 east holes after. I think that would make it feel more like you're Frankensteining two different things together.
Yes, but there's a cohesion that's there when you play 1 west, 2 west, 1 east, 2 east, 5 west. It's just seamless, and you have this sprinkle of holes from both courses at various times in the round. So you have a consolidated patch of west, and then you come back and finish on east. And as you say, go out to the bayside component of the course, and then venture back down to that very bottom southeast corner in the last hour of play. It gives you something that's even greater than the sum of its parts, and not just a click part A, into part B, away we go.
Yeah. And the thing that surprised me doing some looking at aerials, getting ready to record this, is that RM's much more coastal than I've ever felt like it is when I'm playing it. And so from 12 West T and basically slightly longer from 9 West T and 8 West Green, it's like 750 metres to Port Phillip Bay. It's really nothing at all.
Yeah, it's definitely closer than people realise. I remember Andrew Kirby talking about the contours of the 10th green and some putts looking like they're straight and they're not. They actually just fall off towards the water. And I just for the briefest moment, hang on. Oh, yeah. And you realize, it's less than you think. I thought it was over a kilometer, as we'd said in the lead up to the episode. I thought that it was almost a mile towards the water of Port Phillip Bay, but it's less than a kilometer. So
yeah, all right, let's pump through questions, and I think that's going to shake out the things that we maybe haven't already brought up, and maybe we can revisit the things that we have in the context of the questions we're asked. But we've got through the best hole at RM, not on the composite. Then Wilbur Kay, shout out 7 Mile Golf Shop, asked, what are the top three holes not on the main paddock that aren't part of the composite? So obviously one of them is 16 West.
Yeah, 16 West, definitely.
What are the other two?
Probably 5 East and 10 East.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair.
I think 5 East, that short four that we were made lots of reference to in the East episode, and then that long second into the par 5 10th on East with the diagonal bunkering, big green. I think that has to be one of the top three that's not on that main block.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I agree with those. I think they're pretty comfortably the best three. Emerson Waugh, Clint Sykes, and Ian Knox all asked basically verbatim the same question. How many different iterations of the composite course have there been? Well, at least four, right?
Yeah.
Each Prez Cup's had one?
Yeah, I was going to say there was the original 1959 sequence and collection of holes. And then 98 President's Cup varied slightly to start on three, as we said, and then finished 17 and 18 as 1 West, 18 East. 4 East was dropped from the rotation for the 2011 President's Cup, and that was replaced by 16 East.
Mm-hmm.
And then things changed a little bit again with the concluding holes being 1 West, 2 West for the 2019 President's Cup.
Mm. I watched a bit of President's Cup 2019 highlights when I was on the flight home earlier this week. And you talked on the East episode about the right-hand, kind of forward right-hand tee for 16 East.
Yes.
And that was the tee they used for the 2019 President's Cup, I had forgotten that tee perspective. And it is an interesting shot from there, the way that the greens kind of, rather than being perpendicular to you, it kind of sits almost from 10:30 to 4:30.
Yeah. And if they tuck a pin front left, you think, man, there's just sand all around this. And how do I get to it? And it really needs to be a very precise shot. And there's all the bail in the world when the pin's on the right half to that tee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You just hit a little fade up there and away you go. So,
yeah. But I mean, I've had the 80 footer from the right hand side of the green to a left hand pin, and it's not pleasant.
No.
Like, it's not a fun putt. So, yeah, you do have to take on the tough shot at some point. R.A. Chapman asked us, why the difference in routing between tournaments, which I think we've tackled. It's about practicalities with match play. But then he says, 2019 Prez Cup versus the original, which is better?
Definitely the original.
Yeah.
Definitely the original. When you walk from 2 West Green and you just start that little walk up the hill towards 1 East, you almost get a tingle, like you think, oh, we're not playing West, and we've got 1 East coming up now, and it's that sequence, and you hop from West to East and then back to West and then see them in that order. Yeah, it's otherworldly. It's nothing. There's a reason why all the members' events are played over that original sequence, because it's just it's unbeatable.
One of the things I like about that too is that when you play West, if I've got a criticism, you play West and like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you're very like you're wrapping around yourself and you're hugging in back on where you've been. And it is apparent that it's quite a tight routing and a tight piece of, you know, the land is really efficiently used because there's not much land that's not being used for golf, but you're playing back along yourself a lot. And so you're really hyper aware of that. Through that routing that you're talking about of the original composite course, playing 2 east and then 5, 6, 7, you go away from that part of the property. Then you come back an hour and a half later and you play 3 west and 4 west and then disappear down 3 east in a different direction. I think it hides that tightness a bit better because you're not immediately aware of yourself backtracking and hugging where you've already been.
Yeah, McKenzie talks in his 13 principles about those 2 loops of 9 returning and then raises the counterpoint to it by talking about out and back routings and the experience of exploring fresh property and never retracing your steps. And you get more of that under the original sequence. And yeah, you do deviate from that experience that you have when you play the front six on West. Mind you, I saw a tweet of Clayton's recently, an old tweet of his where he talks about just being happy to contain himself to the front six holes of West. Like if that's all he had to play for the rest of his life, he'd be happy. He understands that other people wouldn't be, but he said that if push came to shove, that'd be enough for me. So
I would love to see, thought about this when we were talking about West, but so take the first six holes of West, and I'd love to go down the rankings, the Australian rankings, and see how far down do you get before you say, I'd rather belong to a club that was just the first six. I would take that over that 18 holes. And I reckon it might be like high teens, low 20s. I'd start to say, just give me 1 through 6 on West and that'll do me.
I reckon I might get there before that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good little exercise.
So now we get into access questions, which I think are understandable because, as I say, there is a bit of a mystique and a mystery about composite, even how often and when it's played. You mentioned earlier some of the club events that are scheduled over composite, but let's just rip through. So Ace Arrow asked us how often do members get to play RMC. From your comments earlier, it's kind of 3 or 4 times a year, depending on whether you make championships and all of that. But there's a couple opportunities even for choppers who don't make the club championship finals to get out there. Scott Campbell and Hayden Potter. So Scott asks, is there any way to play RMC if you're not a member? And Hayden asks, do you think RM will reach the point of setting up composite for charity days?
Well, they did have a charity day, and it was the Monday of Cup Week. So that week of Spring Carnival where you had Derby on the Saturday, Cup on the Tuesday, Oaks, and then Stakes. I remember for several years paying, it was 20 years ago, and I would have paid probably $400 for the day, but you got to play composite. Mm-hmm. And it was a shotgun start, and it was a Stableford event, and they had competitions and prizes and a lunch. And you could go into the clubhouse and grab drinks afterwards. And I'm not sure when that ended. And I'm not sure if it would ever return to the calendar. It would have been an outrageously successful event, no doubt. But there were a whole mess of people like me that thought, holy cow, I'm going to play RM Composite today. And I haven't been here very much. And this is going to be a red letter day. And that would have lived in the memories of everyone who participated in that, even if the weather was terrible. There's one or two composite days of the year where members can bring a guest as well. So for those who know a member, if there's time on the tee sheet and it's not fully subscribed, it'll open up to guests in the shadows of the day commencing. So that's one way to do it. But I'll explore and see if there is ever going to be a reintroduction of that sort of charity day or that one day a year where composite's able to be played by visitors who are unaccompanied.
Yeah. But it's, I mean, it's rare. The likelihood of a Australian golf passport listener golf day over composite is probably not high.
Yeah, I wouldn't hold your breath for that. I have Powerball tickets that are on regular direct debit, and that might be the most likely way that event actually gets staged, Scott. So. Mm-hmm.
Why is it better than West? Was another question from Wilbur, and I think better holes and a probably improved routing, right? More holes on good land too.
Yeah, more holes on good land. The strength of the holes that come in is almost unarguably superior to those that are omitted. And just that fun of walking that routing and the land on which those included holes sit.
All right, let's I want to rip through some easy quick ones for us to answer, and then there's a good one for us to finish pontificating on. So Vanilla Uno, on which hole did Tiger hit the famous cap off early putt against Abe Anser in the President's Cup? So Tiger won that match 3-2, so that would have meant that putt was on 18 East, right?
I think
it finished 1-2 West, which makes 18 East the 16th for that.
Yes. So he's had a putt across 18 East green. But I'm sure Vanilla Uno does know that video has been doctored.
Oh, yes. An inch of its life. I watched the actual clip when I was watching those highlights on the plane. So the ball's actually, I paused it. As the ball goes over the lip, Tiger's hand is like maybe like navel to chest height on his way to pull his cap. So he was in the act of taking his cap off before the ball was in the hole. But, you know, his cap wasn't off before the ball was in the hole.
No, the modified video that we so often see and chuckle at.
He's barely made contact in that before he takes the cap off.
Yeah.
So. It just shows how careful we have to be about deep fakes in the modern world. If ever there's a horrific video of me that gets released, I'll just be saying it's a deep fake. Watch the Tiger video. See, look, that looks real too, doesn't it? I didn't do that.
Maybe
there's a video of me making 8 yesterday down the first at New South. I can just say that deep fake. I made 4, of course. What kind of idiot would make 8 in the first hole on a sub-300?
Wasn't going to mention that.
No.
You're talking about videos. There is, again, harking back to the era of mixtapes, there's a link to an item for sale on eBay that is a VHS videotape of the 1998 President's Cup highlights. And for anyone out there who's got a VHS player or knows someone who can transfer VHS to DVD, looking back at that 98 President's Cup, because they're playing with small-headed drivers and Titleist Professional and Tour Prestige golf balls. And so, yeah, they're hitting shots into 3 West as their first hole of the day and then spinning back up the slope.
Wow.
Which is inconceivable on those putting surfaces of that firmness with today's balls. But with those old Bilatas, the spin rates are off the charts. They're probably revving at 12,000 RPM with a sandwich. So, yeah, it's a very different experience. And it's cool for the architectural junkies out there to see Royal Melbourne Composite in the form that it was in 25 years ago. And it's also really cool for people to look back at those two teams. So Carlos Franco, Nick Price, Ernie Els, Shigeki Maruyama, Craig Parry, Steve Elkington and Greg Norman, young Tiger Woods playing with Fred Couples. You have David Javal and Davis Love in that team with Marco Mira and so many other cool names. If anyone's listening.
And of course, that's the only President's Cup that the Nationals have ever won.
Yeah. And it's remarkable. Peter Thompson was captain and pumped up the Americans' tires from the outset, talked about how good they were at the opening ceremony and how they were a formidable opponent, jam-packed with high-ranking stars, and probably gave them this false sense of security. We were a little bit lucky as well in that week with blisteringly hot conditions and a stinker of a north wind for 1 or 2 days that was a little bit different to the presentation in the practice rounds. And then, of course, the Sunday was cold and raining and wet with no wind, so totally different appearance to the course. And guys like Elkington and Nobilo, Greg Turner, they know the many different faces of RM because they've played it in Australasian Tour events for so many years, and probably as juniors as well, truth be told. So yeah, that's if you're listening and you're thinking of purchasing that, get it quick. Just I'll put a link in the show notes so you can see it directly, but someone surely is going to grab that before this episode's out. So,
all right. So Luke Driver asked us, when's the President's Cup heading back to Melbourne? And that's 2028 at Kingston Heath, which leads me into another question from R.A. Chapman. What's the worst skip in a tournament? 10 at Kingston Heath or 16 on East?
I think 10 at Kingston Heath.
Yeah.
It's just such an iconic hole and you look forward to playing it. And yeah, as good as that 19th is at the Heath, it just doesn't.
No, it's not the same.
No.
Tom Beach asks, is there a noticeable difference between the Mackenzie holes and the Russell holes? And I think on the main paddock, not really. I think the most Mackenzie-esque East holes are the ones on the main paddock. And that's probably got a lot to do with the land being the same piece of land, the scale being the same. There's a lot more that ties them together than separates them, the way that the out paddocks of East, you know, are quite different places, quite different terrain, different size.
Totally agree.
All right, so two good ones to finish. Scott Jones, Benny J, and Clates all asked us, is the course better with 4 East or 16 East? Which, as I touched on earlier, I want to get your answer on this, but I think that's a different question to which is the better hole.
I agree it's a different question, and I agree with where you were going earlier in that it's a better 18-hole layout with 4 East in. Your other two par threes are 5 West and 7 West, where you're hitting a short club, and you get down on that back tee, which is 190 metres uphill when you play 4 East. And if you're playing with a hole cut towards the back portion of that green, blindish green, if you're playing into a north wind, you've suddenly got something pretty long in your hands and you need a totally different sort of shot. And so Clates is always fond of saying that courses ask you different questions, and that's a distinctly different question to what you're asked on the other two par threes and what you're asked when you're standing on 16 East tee. So I would err towards the side of the course being better with 4 East included.
Yeah, when I started to think about it that way versus just thinking about how much I like 16 East, I think that's really fair. And I think what you described for that shot as well, you know, 4 East, it's a long shot uphill to an angled green that's also really aggressively bunkered. You know, there's not places to miss that are good. Long left is bush. I recall looking for someone's golf ball there last time we played it that, you know, didn't miss the green by much and maybe even landed on the green and then hopped and it was gone. It might have been A-Ann's ball, actually, if he's listening.
Maybe.
And
I thought you were doing me a solid and just not referencing the fact that it was my ball.
Might have been. I hit what I thought was a really great shot, just hugging the right edge and waiting for it to feed. And, of course, there's that tiny little bunker there that, you know, the other three bunkers on that hole are enormous. There's just a tiny little bunker right on the edge of the green and it slurps up balls that try to play the right shot to feed in with the slope off the right-hand side, but just, you know, 2, 3, 4 meters too far right. It's incredibly exacting. And when you look at the fact that composite's largely used for elite competition, you know, that type of exacting test over a 210-yard uphill shot is probably a pretty good thing to have.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I'm wedded to this image of Ernie Els having just lent on a mid-iron, long-iron really early in his career, hitting this slight draw, landing on the front edge of that green, and then just feeding towards the hole and think, oh, okay, that's what I want to do every single time I play this hole. But, of course, you're starting on it. Like you take a long club and you push it slightly and you're in one of those bunkers on the right side. And I don't know if you've noticed this, for a more errant tee shot, and you get a bunker that's a little bit further from you on the tee and a little bit further right, when you're standing in that hazard, you have this map in your mind where I sort of want to hit my shot at this trajectory or this bunker shot this high and land it here. But you can't because there's another bunker between you and the green. Mm-hmm. You think, yes. Damn, I've got to carry that. And if I carry that, now I'm landing on a downslope and I haven't got much more room to work with. And it is a hard shot and it just has bogey written all over it.
Mm.
for those who think, nah, you know, I'm not going to hit that shot. I'm just going to hit a high fade. Well, you're starting to have a line that is far closer to those cavernous bunkers on the left side of the green mm-hmm. complex. And they are no fun. They're big and deep, and no one ever seems to hit a shot close from there. And I remember Jessica Korda almost lost the Aussie Open that she won over RM Composite, because there's been a few women's Opens played over the years as well. Lydia Ko and Jessica Korda being two winners in those events. But yeah, she had made a meal of the bunker shots from down there and nearly kissed it goodbye. So that's not an attractive proposition either, just sort of eking a little fade into the heart of that green.
It's funny you describe that positive thought process about the bunker shot before you realize the other bunker's there. I, as a Sydney sider, legitimately any bunker I'm on in the sand belt, my thought is I just would quite like to get out of this bunker and not by knifing it and sending it 80 meters over. Like I'd, on the green would be glorious, and I'll take my two-putt bogey and I'll move on. Now, finally, we have a number of questions about the one thing. Putts for Doe and Tony Martin asked, what would RMC be ranked in the world? Would it be higher than West? Jonathan Becker asks, is this the best course in the world from a design standpoint? And Jeremy Bottomley asks, some say if it could be ranked, it would be number one in the world. Do you agree?
Well, Golf Magazine for years and years just ranked Composite. And Golf Digest local edition did as well about 15 years ago, didn't split it into East and West for some silly reason. I haven't played Pine Valley, and I haven't played Royal Dornoch, and I haven't played Muirfield, and I haven't played Shinnecock Hills. So there's a few glaring omissions in my CV around the world. I can't imagine that any of those courses are demonstrably superior or markedly superior to Composite. If they are, oh man, my head is going to explode if I'm ever fortunate enough to go and visit them.
The three courses in my mind that might be the best that I've played are Pine Valley, National Golf Links of America, and RM West. I've not played Composite. If I put my mindset in Composite replacing West, West probably just sits a feather below Pine Valley and National Golf Links, not National on the Cape Shank. If you replace the Composite holes in, it probably beats National Golf Links. It gives Pine Valley a run for its money, which,
okay,
you know, there's nothing else that I've played anywhere. And again, I'll shout out that I've been to Shinnecock but not played it. I haven't played Muirfield in Scotland.
Cypress Point and the Old Course.
I've got Old Course and Dornoch are comfortably behind even West for me.
Wow. Okay.
So, but the fact that Composite would even be a debate with Pine Valley is huge. Like it's not outside the top three in the world, I don't think. When you start with West being the sixth, seventh, eighth, maybe, you know, and you improve on that, and then you improve on not just better holes, but better land and a better routing and a better walk, all of a sudden, yeah, like it's comfortably, I think, second or third, if it's not first.
Okay. The fact that's what I was going to conclude with, the fact that then you go through the catalogue of courses we've named in that discussion and where we've grouped it and we're umming and ahhing on where each of them sit, that probably tells you.
Yeah.
There's a great Fred Couples quote in that book that Clayton's put out on the courses of RM West, and he sort of has a similar sort of bracket. St Andrews, Augusta, and Royal Melbourne are my three favourite courses in the world. Like St Andrews and Augusta National, you can almost slam it anywhere off the tee at Royal Melbourne, and you can still get to the greens, but the putting is going to be crazy if you play it that way. It really is so dangerous around the greens, and you can make a bogey from anywhere. And when the wind blows, it's, oh my God, how do I manage this course? So yeah. he's got a good little bracket of three there that he mentions as well. And I know that Faldo consistently comes back to the point that Composite might be the best in the world for him. So despite his affinity for Muirfield and having won an Open there. So
yeah. Well, and Freddie either deliberately or or accidentally, you know, in his little triumvirate there, named three courses that Mackenzie, you know, obviously took great inspiration from or brought into this world. So
yeah,
that's probably a pretty good place for us to end it.
Yeah, I reckon it is. Thanks so much to everyone who asked questions and egged us on to make sure that we would record this episode. Hopefully you've enjoyed
it. Yeah, it felt like a good way to tie a bow on our coverage of the club.
Definitely. Yeah.
Maybe we'll do another episode if we can get me onto composite, then we can really dig deep into is it the best golf course in the world.
Yeah, immediate debrief in the clubhouse afterwards.
Yes.
A little note to close, the Asia Pacific Amateur Championship is about to be staged over composite. Chairman Ridley and his fellow Augusta National members will be on the grounds. I don't know if it's too late to volunteer as a caddy, but I saw a call out for requests for people to serve as caddies for part on the weekend or all of the event. I'll forward via our Twitter account. I'll retweet that shout out for participants to lend support to volunteer to the Asia Pacific Amateur at RM.
And that's from 26th to 29th of October.
Yes.
Spectators, welcome for that?
Yes.
Perfect. There we go. We'll get this out before that. And if you're hungry for a look at RM and at the composite, you can. Do you know which version they're playing? It's a stroke play event, so.
I think that it may result in us talking about another small change.
Awesome.
So that'll be two more pages to add as an appendix.
It's like Max Walker's hair, just like it's always evolving.
Yes. So that might be a job for us over summer to get you onto composite somehow. That'll be good.
That would be good.